Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of November 3rd. This week we publish our second fall books issue. One of the books that we review is What Happened at Vatican II by the Jesuit John W. O'Malley. Now, we had Father O'Malley in last year to discuss, among other things, his book, which is being published by Harvard University Press. So we thought we'd provide an excerpt of that interview on this week's podcast. Father O'Malley and I began by discussing what prompted him to start this project. First, we're going to talk about a new book that you have, Father, out that you've just submitted to Harvard University Press about Vatican II. Maybe you can tell us about the genesis of that book.
Well, I was in Rome during the Council. I was writing my dissertation, actually, for Harvard University in history, 16th century history, and the Council was going on just about a mile away. So I became very interested in it because I began to see parallels between what was going on in the 16th century and what was going on at the Vatican Council. So I began to, 1971, as a matter of fact, I published my first article on it. And then I began to teach courses on it. Matter of fact, one course I taught was called Two Great Councils, Trent and Vatican II.
Okay.
So that was a lot of fun, and they do illuminate each other. And then I've been lecturing on it and writing on it. Finally, I decided that despite all this written on Vatican II, I mean, the library shelves are overflowing, what's really missing in English, and many other languages as well, is what I call a basic book. That is a book that if someone came up to you and said, I've heard about this thing called Vatican II, what would be a book that would kind of get me into it and sort of lay out the ground rules and so forth? That's the kind of book I'm trying to write. So
yes, there are a lot of books out there that are, you know, sets or volumes, and for the average reader, it may be a little daunting. So you're looking for something that's a little more approachable.
Right. The just finished publishing was a five-volume, multi-authored book that was originated in Italy, but it's in Italian, Spanish, German, French, and English now. And it's wonderful, wonderful for the specialist, but oh boy.
For the rest of us, it
yeah,
might be nice.
Yeah, and even for the specialist. I mean, with multi-authored books, you go back and forth, and they repeat each other, and so you don't know. It's easy to get lost.
Sure, sure. So this book, now where do you start? Do you start, you know, 10 years before the Council, or do you go back even further than that?
Oh, no, I take the long, long view. It's a short, I mean, relatively short book. I'm hoping that it'll be under 300 pages or around 300 pages. But I feel that you'll never understand the Council unless you understand what led up to it. And I do some stuff about the very early history of the Church and councils. What is a council? But then I have a chapter called The Long 19th Century, raced through from the French Revolution up to the death of Pius XII in 1958. So setting the stage is a big part of the book.
Yes, that is a long 19th century, 150 years.
Right, yes, yeah, yeah. I get a lot of kidding about that, but I'm sticking to it, so.
And so you go through Vatican I as well in that
well,
chapter?
Well, briefly, yeah. I go through the sort of what was going on intellectually in Catholicism, what was going on politically. For instance, one very interesting thing is in the 19th century in Europe, Catholics were intellectually and politically marginalized. But on the eve of Vatican II, they were the dominant leaders in politics in Europe and JFK in the States.
Interesting.
So it was a Catholic moment politically.
Now, what are some of the parallels you see between Trent and Vatican II?
Well, Trent was a reform council in that it was looking to a very specific reform of church structures. That is to say, it wanted to get the bishops back in their dioceses, wanted to give them an agenda once they got back there, and then only one diocese per bishop. So in the long run, Trent was successful. It took a long time to get that working. I mean, you know, some places in 40 years and some places 200 years, but eventually it was accomplished. Vatican II was quite different. Aggiornamento was updating, kind of a soft word for reform. And what I do, I mean, sort of along that line, I say there were sort of three issues under the issues at Vatican II, and one of the issues was the relationship between what I call center and periphery. That is to say, the relationship between the Vatican offices especially, and the papacy, and the episcopacy, the rest of the church. So again, it's a sort of a structural issue, quite differently formulated than a Trent, but there are parallels.
Well, very interesting. Now, when is this book due out?
It's on the fall list for Harvard University Press. What happened at Vatican II? It's a little bit of a commercial here. And it should be out by certainly the latest, by the late summer.
Okay. What happened at Vatican II from Harvard University Press? Now, we thought we'd also talk about another project you have underway with St. Joseph's University Press. Now, you recently published a history of Jesuits in the arts with them, which is a very attractive book with lots of illustrations. And now that book has led to this project, which is Early Modern Catholicism and the Visual Arts. Maybe you could tell us about that.
Well, as I said, my original field was Renaissance, so I was therefore interested in art and art history, although I'm not an art historian by any count. But I did then a history of the Jesuits, the early Jesuits, the first Jesuits, and began to realize how involved they were in art. For many reasons. One being that they were priests, they had these churches, they were building new churches, and as time went on, they engaged the leading artists of the day. I mean, Bernini, Rubens would be the two most outstanding ones. But besides that, with their schools, they became specialists really in theater, which led them into music, dance, and all kinds of special effects. They were sort of the great special effects artists of the 17th and 18th century. And then, so they're in some way sort of in the vanguard there, but Catholicism itself is, it's very tactile and it's very embodied, and especially given the fact that most of the Protestant churches were leery, if not antagonistic, towards the visual arts, Catholicism just kind of went to town on it. So there's so much to be done there, and relatively little. I mean, Catholicism has now been sort of discovered by historians, so we hope to capitalize on that booming industry.
So this is going to be a series where you're looking at early modern Catholicism. What do you mean, after the Reformation?
Yes, basically. Again, what are you going to call that period? The term Counter-Reformation is kind of loaded, and even Catholic Reformation is sort of loaded, because my thesis is that Catholicism is bigger than either of those categories. It's what about Matteo Ricci in China? It's not Counter-Reformation. It's
sure.
Not, you know, what about Bartolomeo de las Casas in Spanish America and so forth? So early modern Catholicism, let's say 15th, 16th, 17th century.
Now, the description of the series here says that the arts sort of got support from the Council of Trent, which, as you say here, sort of affirms the efficacy of sacred images to counter Protestant disdain and even iconoclasm. So there was almost a propaganda element to it as well?
Yes. I mean, I think that if you look at that art, there's a propaganda element to it. There's an instructive element to it. But I think deep down, what's basically there, it's touching the affect and sort of... Actually, a lot of it is simply devotional. So trying to get people more in touch with themselves and with God and then with the saints and the angels and all those wonderful creatures that help us.
So you're hoping in this series to cover not just the visual arts, but also other, as you mentioned, dance. I mean, are those things you hope to incorporate as well?
Well, I mean, if we can. I mean, it's sort of difficult to incorporate dance because unless you have some sketches and things like this. But if a book comes along... that does it, we'll consider it, and if it's good, we'll publish it. So.
Right, the idea right now is that you have a couple in the works, but you're inviting proposals. So.
Right, but so we're advertising and inviting proposals, and we've got a couple in the works, which just began. It's less than a year old.
So. Okay.
And it takes a while for a book, you know.
So. Sure. So if people are interested, they could go to the St. Joseph's University Press website, and there's information there.
Absolutely.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Great. I want to thank you again for joining us for this week's edition of the American Magazine Podcast. Just to give you a heads up, the November 10th issue will be all about the Year of Paul, so we have several articles about that, and we will have several online features, including a slideshow of some Pauline pilgrimage sites. as well as a podcast, a discussion with a Paulist priest about the Pauline year. And also Father Jim McDermott will be doing a humorous video sketch about St. Paul and St. Peter. So you should definitely check online next week for all of that content. Again, you can subscribe to our podcast or leave comments at americamagazine.podbean.com. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.